From WHYY in Philadelphia, this is Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. Should Democrats abandon so-called woke language? That's what a memo from the center-left think tank Third Way suggests as a way to appeal to more voters.
The memo critiques Dems for not sounding like regular people, using therapy speak, organizer jargon, and seminar room language when they talk. Third Way lists 45 words liberal politicians and activists should avoid, including privilege, triggering, birthing person, unhoused, and systems of oppression.
But if Democrats give up this language, are they also giving up on their values of inclusion? Is language really the reason the left is failing to connect with voters, or is this debate a distraction from bigger problems? Are there words that drive you crazy? Email studio2 at whyy.org. That's all coming up next, but first the news.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. The U.S. Supreme Court is giving President Trump the green light to remove a Biden-appointed member of the Federal Trade Commission despite a 1914 federal law limiting the president from firing an FTC commissioner without cause. Chief Justice John Roberts had issued an order to temporarily block a lower court's ruling that reinstated Commissioner Rebecca Kelly Slaughter while her case was litigated. She and fellow Democratic appointee Alvaro Bedoya were dismissed earlier this year. In Florida, jury selection is underway in the trial of the man charged with attempting to assassinate then-candidate Donald Trump last year. NPR's Greg Allen reports a Secret Service agent says he spotted Ryan Ruth holding a rifle and fired on him while Trump was golfing at his West Palm Beach club in September.
A witness says he saw Ruth running from what prosecutors call a sniper's nest in the tree line near Trump's golf club in West Palm Beach. Ruth was arrested a short time later driving north on the interstate. Ruth faces five charges, including attempting to assassinate a major presidential candidate, which carries a maximum sentence of life. He'll be representing himself in court. U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon granted Ruth's request to dismiss his federal public defenders, but said they will remain on standby. Last week, Judge Cannon denied Ruth's request to subpoena President Trump, saying his motion contained, quote, various insults and no pertinent facts. Greg Allen, NPR News, Fort Pierce, Florida.
Israeli forces say they have leveled another high-rise building in Gaza City that the military says its Hamas enemies have been using for surveillance. Israel's been warning residents to evacuate south as it pushes ahead with demolitions in Gaza City. Many Palestinians say they've been repeatedly displaced since the war began nearly 2 years ago, and there's no place safe to run, not even humanitarian zones. 5 years ago, the Labor Day wildfires ravaged Oregon, destroying thousands of homes and killing 11 people. Today, people are still living in hotels and other transitional housing. Jefferson Public Radio's Jane Vaughn reports.
The Alameda Fire in southwestern Oregon destroyed around 2,500 homes on September 8, 2020. Most of them were manufactured, and many of the people displaced were older or Spanish speakers. Mary Martin used to live in a mobile home park that burned to the ground. Earlier this year, she finally got a state grant and purchased her own manufactured home.
I have a new spot. I still miss my old spot a lot. And I wish it could have been the same, but yeah, it's just new. I don't like new.
The 2020 wildfire season was the most destructive on record in the state's history. For NPR News, I'm Jane Vaughn in Ashland, Oregon.
From Washington, this is NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from Arm, committed to delivering innovative, advanced computing designed to enable worldwide companies to unleash the capabilities and experiences of AI. The future of AI is built on Arm. Arm.com. This is NPR.
Live from the Ken and Valerie Baker Studio at WHYY, this is Studio 2.
On Monday, September 8th, welcome, 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 friends, to the show. I am Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt. Recently, Cherry, the internet was aflutter after a center-left think tank called Third Way released a memo, pretty short memo. But in that memo, they said that Democrats have to stop using certain types of words that alienate voters. They listed 45 words and terms. You probably know some of them. I can read a few here.
Yeah,
triggering, othering, privilege, cultural appropriation, Latinx, on and on down the line. And basically the think tank argued that these words are turning voters off. So today we're going to talk about language, specifically the language that Democrats seem to use, and whether or not that's at the core of their fading popularity. We have one of the authors of that memo on the program today. His name is Matt Bennett. We're also going to talk with a Democrat who has to make stuff happen every day as a Democrat, Sarah McBride, mm-hmm. Congresswoman representing the great state of Delaware. So both of those guests lined up. We want to hear from you. Do you think Democrats should stop using woke words? And by the way, what words drive you crazy?
Mm-hmm.
I've got a couple. Call 888-477-9499. Email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, hello, drop a comment in the chat.
And Avi, I will say I was a reporter in Philly for well over a decade. And, you know, I covered a lot of activism, civil rights issues, mass incarceration. And I remember, you know, early in my beat coverage, I used to get gentle, sometimes nasty calls or emails from activists complaining about the language I used in my stories. And mm-hmm. I thought about, there was a time when some of these words you just mentioned were not part of regular conversation. So I look forward to hearing from our callers. You know, if you have stories, if you have words, it's just every time you hear it, you know, you just want to roll your eyes like you're 12 years old. We'd love to hear from you. 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. But I have so many questions for our guests today.
And if you're one of those activists who yelled at Cherry in the past, give us a call.
Uh-oh. Dredging up stuff. but we have our trio of news stories.
Yeah, start us off.
Yeah, a little bit of breaking news straight from my inbox. Pennsylvania Governor Josh Shapiro has approved SEPTA's use of future capital dollars for that transit agency so that it can fill its funding hole over the next couple of years. According to a statement from the governor's office, Shapiro has directed the secretary of PennDOT to use up to $394 million and capital assistance funding to pay for SEPTA's daily operations. This comes after a judge reversed SEPTA's across-the-board 20% service cuts. If you remember, that came in late last week. And SEPTA was essentially told, go back to full service, even if you don't have the money to pay for it. So on Friday, SEPTA's general manager, Scott Sauer, wrote to PennDOT saying they have no choice but to tap into those capital funding dollars. And I mean, Avi, we talked about this on the show. Senate Republicans actually wanted SEPTA to use funds from the Public Transit Trust Fund, dollars that had previously been allocated for SEPTA projects. They said, use this for 2 years while we figure out a permanent solution. House Democrats said that's a no-go because that would be robbing Peter to pay for Paul and basically, you know, endanger SEPTA in the future. And so now it seems like that money is going to be tapped in, but it won't be previously allocated dollars. It's going to be future funding, but still from PTTF.
Yeah, in the short term, this seems like a capitulation for the Democrats. Although I will add that it sets up an interesting dynamic here with the larger budget negotiation, because need I remind you, there's still no budget here in Pennsylvania for the ongoing fiscal year. And, you know, one of the big leverage points for the Republicans was that Democrats really needed this SEPTA money now.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now they've got the money and they didn't need an act of the legislature to do it. Republicans, they still need a budget.
Yeah.
Their constituents rely heavily on state money.
Yep.
And so this, I think, evens it out. And the question going forward is, will Democrats get some of the backfilled transit funding in this current budget? Now, can they hold the line longer than Republicans want to hold the line?
Yeah.
Because their emergency, their fire has now been put out today, theoretically.
Yeah.
Of course, Democratic constituencies rely on the state budget, too. But it does potentially even things up a bit here. And folks, reminder, we still don't have a budget.
10 weeks. 10 weeks. No budget.
Story number two. Trump border czar Tom Homan told CNN yesterday to, quote, expect action in sanctuary cities. Another threat that the administration wants to ramp up immigration enforcement. Most of the focus is on Chicago right now, where there's the specter of National Guard deployment. Philadelphia is on the administration's list of so-called sanctuary cities, but the city has not really been singled out in any comments recently by the administration. So we are in the same holding pattern we've been in for a while, wondering if Philadelphia is going to be targeted by federal authorities.
Yeah, and people have been calling, some advocates have been calling on the Parker administration to be more vocal about this issue. She's avoided using the term, you know, our mayor has avoided using the term sanctuary city. But, you know, we've seen, you know, ICE sort of ramping up. There have been mass raids at a Hyundai plant construction site in Georgia. Hundreds, mostly Koreans, were taken into custody. Another ICE raid in New York, scores taken into custody. And now we're seeing Boston and other, you know, cities sort of having this battle, and Philadelphia kind of silent. So we'll see all of this as ICE is ramping up hiring, you know,
yep.
10,000 new ICE agents, you know, supposedly going to be, you know, suited up by the end of the year. So there's a lot of talk, and I feel like we're going to be talking about this for quite some time.
Yeah, we will. We'll keep our eyes open.
Yeah. Third story. Big one that blew up over the weekend. I don't know if you saw this. It was video.
How did you miss it? You couldn't have missed it. You could not have missed it.
No. A video of a woman confronting a dad and his son over a home run ball at a Marlins-Phillies game in Florida that took place on Friday. And if you haven't seen the video, it shows a man running a few seats over to grab a home run ball. Several people were reaching for it, but he gets it. He runs back to his seat to drop it into his son's glove. Then a woman comes over. They're calling her Phillies Karen. And you know what Karen stands for. And she's been getting in, she's seen getting into this man's face, yelling and pointing until the man takes the ball from his son's glove and hands it to the woman. That man is New Jersey native Drew Feltwell, who had run to get the ball as a birthday week celebration gift for his son, Lincoln. Here's what Drew had to say about why he relented and ultimately gave the ball to that woman.
I'm literally leaning back as she's in my face yelling and yelling and yelling. And I pretty much just wanted her to go away. And because I had a fork in the road, either, you know, do something I was probably going to regret or be dad and show him how to de-escalate the situation.
I think he made the right decision, by the way. Lincoln got hooked up with a bag of swag for Marlins.
The
Marlins. He also got to meet Philly center fielder Harrison Bader. So, I mean, it's a pretty good birthday week for Lincoln.
Oh, yeah. It's much better than a ball.
Yeah, but this has sparked so much discussion. Some people were on the Karen side, Philly's Karen, who has not yet been identified. We don't know who she is, but then some people on the dad, you know, I have no take. You may have a take.
You obviously have no take?
Zero take?
That's impossible.
You know what? My issue is, you know, how things get blown up because of video. Like, this would not have been a big deal, but it went viral.
I am not kidding. I happen to be watching, like, the intro, a segment of The View today, and this was one of their top stories. It's crazy.
It's crazy.
So, but look.
I love Avi's takes, by the way. I'm like paying attention. I'm looking. Okay. Go ahead. Okay. Give it to me.
So Phillies Karen was in the wrong here because the etiquette is the ball is loose. Anyone can go for it. And whoever grabs it gets it. Don't hurt anyone.
That's the etiquette on the field.
Don't trample anyone. But it's not like because the ball landed closer to your seat than the other guy's seat that you get first dibs to the ball. That's just not how it works.
That's not how it works, Kevin. Karen.
That said, I have found myself more and more, in a weird way, rooting for Phillies Karen.
Really?
Because we know how this works.
Mm-hmm.
Someone gets scapegoated by the internet, and within hours, they find out who the person is. The person gets disciplined by their job, blah, 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 blah. No one escapes the internet. And yet, somehow, Phillies Karen is still on the run.
We don't know who she is.
She's still out there. They don't know who she is.
She's on the run?
It's a little bit like rooting for D.B. Cooper, you know? Like, I don't condone hijacking an airplane, but it's kind of amazing that no one ever found out who he was. And I'm kind of at this point hoping that we never find out who Phillies Karen is, because we don't know why she did it, right?
She's on the internet lamb. I love it.
She might be a jerk. She might be a jerk. I acknowledge that. Or she might not know the etiquette, or mm-hmm. she might have been having a bad day, or she might have been confused. And it would be kind of nice for someone to do something stupid that was caught on video and just get away with it one time.
So you're like, run, Karen, run.
Run, Karen, run. I don't know.
That take definitely shocked me. I was not expecting you to say that.
I'm not like in favor of what she did. I just like the internet mob always wins, and I just want them to take an L for once.
For once, take the L. Run, Karen, run.
And the kid got everything he wanted and more.
He did.
So no one got hurt. Win-win.
If you believe WHYY is essential to our community, join WHYY's Y Circle with a gift of $45 per month. Not only will you be investing in the programs you love, but you'll ensure they remain accessible for everyone, and you'll receive invitations to exclusive events. So if WHYY is important to you and it's within your means, consider giving $45 a month to protect this local resource. Visit whyy.org/YCircle.
Ensemble Arts Philly supports WHYY and presents An Evening with Samin Nosrat. Known for her book, Salt, Fat, Acid, Heat, Samin celebrates her new cookbook, Good Things, and discusses the ways cooking brings us closer, feeding both the body and our need for connection and community. An Evening with Samin Nosrat, September 17th at the Miller Theater. Ticket details at EnsembleArtsPhilly.org. That's EnsembleArtsPhilly.org.
On the next Fresh Air...
Hi, this is Fresh Air, and you're listening to Billy Strings.
Yep, singer-songwriter and guitarist Billy Strings joins us to talk about his life and play some music. He's got one foot in traditional bluegrass and another in improvisational jam music. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY. Well, he throwed it away and he went to town to see a little woman.
Welcome back to Studio 2. I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. There's been a lot of Democratic hand-wringing since Donald Trump won re-election in 2024, much of it revolving around the idea that Dems are out of touch. But what does that really mean? Some in the party will tell you it's their policies or their passiveness. Others, and I say this next word with full irony intended, others will say it's their patois.
Mm-hmm. Matt Bennett is the executive vice president and co-founder of Third Way, a center-left think tank. Third Way recently published a list of 45 terms they want Democrats to stop using. They include Latinx, microaggression, safe space, and others that they believe make them sound elitist or extreme. Matt Bennett is here to walk us through Third Way's argument. Matt, welcome to Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
And for our listeners, do you think Democrats should stop using woke words? And what words drive you crazy? Give us a call, 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. If you're on YouTube or Facebook, drop a comment in the chat.
And so, Matt, we want to start with you because, you know, your organization drafted that memo. You have these list of words. I want you to lay out your argument and tell us why you believe words are the problem.
Well, I want to be clear that words are not the only problem. Words mm-hmm. are a problem. As you both noted at the top, Democrats have a lot of problems. You know, I help run a think tank. We spend a lot of time thinking about policy. We think about the kind of message and narrative that Democrats are using. All of those things are really problematic at the moment. But one of the things we wanted to highlight was the way that Democrats and Democratic allies, including occasionally us, sound. And too often we sound like weirdos. We sound like we just walked out of a faculty lounge at some university, or we just sound elitist and out of touch with the way that people whose votes we desperately need and have lost, the way they talk, they live, they act. And so we wanted to call attention to some of those words and phrases that not just Democratic politicians, but their allies have been using, and beg that people stop doing that.
Let me ask you, Matt, don't Republicans sound like weirdos too sometimes? Like, there's a lot of stuff that comes out of right-wing manosphere 4chan culture that if you said it to a normal person, they would be like, what the heck are you talking about? A woke scold, red pill, blah, 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 blah. Now, I understand it's not it doesn't sound maybe elitist, but I do think a lot of stuff that Republican politicians and activists say sounds just as weird to the normal person. What's your argument that Democrats have maybe a bigger problem here than Republicans? Or maybe they have the same problem. I don't know.
I mean, we lost the election, so
there you go.
Proof was in the pudding. Look, you're right. Republicans are super weird. I mean, Tim Walz was on the ticket last year because he made the case pretty persuasively on TV that Republicans were weird. And I think he was right about that.
Yeah.
And you're certainly correct that there's all kinds of stuff that they do and say that really puts barriers between themselves and regular people also. But, you know, we have to deal with our side. And I think our problems in some ways are bigger. We are leading the very voters that used to constitute our base. I mean, not just white voters, but voters of color, particularly those who have not been to college, started to kind of move away from Democrats in terrifying ways. It started about a decade ago, and it massively accelerated last year. And some of that is a kind of cultural disconnect. And some of that is because we put barriers between ourselves and those voters in the way that we talk and act. Again, not everything, but that's just a piece of the puzzle.
I want to go ahead and start by, because this is, we want to hear from our listeners as well. I want to bring in a caller. We have Joseph from Mount Airy on the line. Joseph, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Well, first, let me make this first comment before I talk about this. Hello, Sherry, to you and Ivy and your guests. First of all, we had the show last week. It should be very troubling to black people that a right-wing lawyer that y'all had on y'all show agree with Sherelle Parker. That should be troubling to the black community and stuff. But anyway, on your topic today, you know, like I always say, the reason why the Democrat Party lost the election last November, Sherry and Ivy, is because, again, they refused to appeal to their heart and soul. The base of the Democrat Party is black women. Black men, too, but especially black women. And so them trying to appeal to black women, working-class black women, single mothers, they always try to appeal to these white suburban mothers and these white women and men, white women that claim that they want abortion rights, and yet they still in the polls and voted for Donald Trump. They put their racism over their own, and now they're crying the blues about Trump taking away their abortion rights. They had a chance of voting both Kamala Harris, but they went and voted for Donald Trump anyway. But the Democrat Party always do that to them, say they're going to do right by black people and appeal to black women especially. They always appeal to white suburban moms and white men, and that's why black people getting more and more turned off by the Democrat Party.
Thank you so much. That's Joseph from Mount Airy. Has a point there. Bros Fan says cultural appropriation. Buggy on YouTube and Facebook says, this is honestly such a dangerous conversation when we are facing rising authoritarianism, like playing into the fascist hands by censoring ourselves isn't going to help. And so, Matt, I wanted to kind of ask you, those are just some of the feelings we're getting from callers and listeners. But I wanted to ask you, how did you come up with this list of words? Like where, because there's so many words that are being used and floating out in the lexicon right now. What made you say these are the 45 we want to focus on?
Look, there's probably others, and they really are just kind of, they exemplify what we are, the point that we were trying to make, which is talk like normal people. I mean, you can see this, it's starting to happen. There are some Democrats running for office right now, or who are in office right now, who have really been conscious about talking the way that people talk at the grocery store, at the football game, because if you don't talk like normal people, it makes it harder for them to support you. And I just want to go to the point that your listener made about rising authoritarianism. We could not agree more. It is a terrifying moment in our politics and in our country right now. We believe we are teetering on the brink of authoritarian takeover if we're not already over the brink. But our role here is to try to help Democrats beat the authoritarians and win elections. And it's just an inescapable fact that we just lost an election to the authoritarian. And part of the reason we lost is a bunch of voters that used to vote for Democrats, that voted for Democrats as recently as 2020, moved away from us. And all the data that we have, focus groups that we've watched, dozens and dozens of them, all the public opinion data that we've gathered over 20 years of doing this work, leads us to believe that part of that problem is this cultural disconnect, and part of that problem is about language.
Yeah. Well, can you drill a little deeper with that? Because this is a, I think, inherently pretty squishy thing. It's hard to isolate that these particular words or some set of words is what's driving a voter away from a particular party. You're saying it's based on focus groups, and I think even in your memo, you said it's not like there's like a single data point we could produce here to prove the thesis, but let's try to prove it, I guess. It's focus groups that's leading you to this conclusion?
Yeah, it's part of it. Look, and to some extent, yes, some of the criticism of this memo is like, where's the data showing all of this is hurting us? And our answer to that is, if you need data to tell you that calling a pregnant woman an inseminated person doesn't sound odd to voters, you might not be very good at politics. I mean, there's just no question. There's a senator from Arizona, Ruben Gallego, who talks all the time about how much he hates the term Latinx. Latinx was a term developed in academia and was kind of propagated in politics by the philanthropic space. And it is intended to be inclusive because the idea was plenty of people who are of Latin origin don't want to be identified as Latino or Latina or Hispanic. Most of these words, in fact, all of them, come from a place of trying to be inclusive. But the result has been that they just sound exclusive because they are created by people in elite circles talking to other people in elite circles.
But does this come down to, Matt, essentially like a gut feel thing? Because you said, like, you gave an example and you're just like, look, this doesn't sound normal. A regular voter would be turned off by this. It feels like a lot of this does come down to gut feel. We feel like these words are driving people away.
Not entirely. I mean, look, to be clear, focus groups, that's not data. That's anecdote.
Right.
Focus groups, by their very nature, are qualitative information that we've gathered. And we and others have, and there's been a lot of chatter on social media about this thing, and a lot of Democratic consultants have said, I have heard this come up over and over in focus groups where they say Democrats sound bizarre. They just talk in ways that I understand the words they're saying, but I don't understand why they are using those words.
Yeah.
And that does come up pretty frequently.
I want to read a couple comments. Maura writes, I feel like Democrats over-adjusted their language to offset the Republican narrative. It doesn't hurt our message of inclusion. It just makes us appear weak when we are already looking that way. Ruth writes, words are important, but selecting words that are being used to try to explain and accommodate the diversity of this nation and saying they should not be used is just strange. And so I wanted to sort of get your take, Matt, on how we got here, because during our setup of the show, I was talking about, I've been a reporter. I covered a lot of justice movements, civil rights issues. And I remember a time in covering things when a lot of these words you're talking about were not included in the narrative. So how did we get to this space where, you know, this language has injected itself into what I think you guys are, it's like a liberal speak.
Yeah, it's a great question, Terry. Look, I think what happened was, and this was part of a broader cultural movement in the United States, much of which was incredibly important and good. And a lot of it was accelerated in the aftermath of the George Floyd murder, when people kind of woke up to institutional racism and to a whole host of ills in our society, in our culture, and our economy that we've been facing for a long time. And part of that awakening, that's where the word woke comes from. I would argue, as a person of left, that most of that was incredibly important and very, very positive for our politics and for our culture. But one of the things that began to happen was language started to change, and it was born out of academia. The words on our list, not all of them, but many of them, come from college campuses. And the fact is that most of the people that work in and around Democratic politics and in the nonprofits and philanthropies that support Democratic politics, a lot of them are recent college grads, and that's where they learn these words, and those words became markers. If you did not use them, if you used the old language that you were talking about, you became kind of out of touch, and it became vital for people to use this language or else they were shunned. And that's where I think things went wrong.
We got a lot of callers and commenters lined up. I want to read this comment from Corey, who says, we can't even get conservatives to define what they think woke means. Mm. It's been so co-opted, first by progressives, then by conservatives, that it's pretty much lost its original meaning. And I want to loop back with that to the point that Buggy was making on YouTube that you responded to, Matt. You know, Buggy is worried about rising fascism, authoritarianism. Mm-hmm. But one of the things that Buggy said was that it doesn't help essentially to capitulate to the fascists, right? To, if they want to make woke a bad thing, to agree and throw your hands up and say, well, woke's a bad thing, we won't say it anymore. And you could do that with a lot of these other words. I want you to respond to that part of Buggy's point, Matt. It's that it might not be the words so much as apologizing for using the words.
I don't think anybody should apologize for using the words. I just don't think they should use the words. And I think it's important in this moment to distinguish between what is true and what is a bunch of nonsense made up by the far right. There's a guy named Roy Teixeira who writes about this, and he calls it the Fox News fallacy. And what he means is that not everything on Fox News is made up nonsense. Some of it is, a lot of it is, but some of it isn't. So during the Biden administration, for example, there was a crisis at the border. That was not made up. Now, they twisted it all, you know, out of shape, and they distorted it for sure. But some of it is real. And I think in this instance, this isn't just a completely, you know, manufactured thing by the far right. It is actually true that people do not like when Democrats and their allies sound like they are talking at them, patronizing them, or accusing them because they're not using the right language of somehow being bigoted. That is a real problem that we face. That is not a confection of the right. And I think it's something we have to grapple with.
Yeah, a lot to think about what Matt just said. Lobster says on YouTube, Facebook's free speech is free speech. Andrea says, it all seems so performative that I cannot even think about it. Do you know how many people became independents based on this two-party system? And she's talking about whether or not, you know, language is related to either party. We have a lot to talk about. We're going to bring in some of these callers on the other side of this break. We also have another guest lined up, and we'll talk about the policing of language and how that got Democrats to this place. So do you think Democrats should stop using woke words? What words get you hot and bothered and a little upset? You can give us 888-477-9499. You can email studio2@whyy.org. We have a lot more coming up. We'll be right back.
Can science help you find love?
After 3 days of chatting is actually the sweet spot of coordinating a date.
Should you throw out your black plastic utensils?
People looked at the plastic utensils as if they were murderous items.
And how old are those apples at the grocery store?
If you're buying an apple in June or July, that apple is coming up on its first birthday.
Can we decode whale language? And how do you stop procrastinating?
You have to be willing to give yourself permission to have an unproductive, not great productivity session.
I'm Mike and Scott. Every week, The Pulse explores health and science issues that matter to you and your life. You can listen to the show on WHYY-FM, Friday mornings at 9 and Saturdays at noon, or anytime wherever you get your podcasts.
Scott Tong. In his new book, Ordinary Magic, author and psychologist Gregory Walton writes about why we spiral emotionally. Yes, spiraling is often a difficult experience, but Walton says sometimes it can bring useful change. He explains next time in Here and Now. Weekdays at 1 on WHYY.
And welcome back, everybody, to Studio 2. I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron.
And I'm Cherry Gregg. We are talking about a memo from the center-left think tank Third Way asking Democrats to ditch what some people label woke language. Words like cultural appropriation, birthing person, triggering, food insecurity. Those are the type they're talking about. And we're asking you, our listeners, this. Do you think Democrats should stop using woke words? What words drive you crazy? The number is 888-477-9499. The email is studio2@whyy.org. And if you're watching on YouTube or Facebook, drop those comments in the chat.
Let's bring in a caller real quick before we get to our next guest. Deborah from Wynwood is on the line. Deborah, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Hi, I love your show.
Thanks, Deborah.
I love your show. I think we need to scrap those words, not that I don't support them. We need to skew to the middle so that we can get the very tiny minority that will actually sway an election. The left has nowhere to go. They're not going to vote for the Republicans. And if they put up a third-party candidate, they know, they must know, they're only going to draw from the left. We need to go with three things: Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security. We have to stick to the economy and make and count the number of dollars that are left in people's pockets. Mm. It's the economy. That's what Clinton said, and I think he's still right.
There's Deborah from Wynwood with the prescription. Let's reintroduce one of our guests, Matt Bennett, Executive Vice President for Public Affairs and co-founder of Third Way, one of the authors of that memo we've been talking about. And let me now introduce our second guest, Congresswoman Sarah McBride, a Democrat who represents the first state, the great state of Delaware. Congresswoman McBride, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me.
And so, Congresswoman McBride, want to ask you, I mean, you heard about Third Way's list, these 45 words they say Democrats need to stop using. What's your take?
Well, I think there is no question that if we are going to build the coalition necessary to win elections, if we're going to build the coalition necessary to deliver for working people and families across this country, we've got to make sure that we are presenting a message that people understand. We don't have to betray our values to speak to the American people plainly and clearly. We need to be able to use words that, frankly, not only most Americans are using, but frankly, most of the people in the communities that we're trying to defend are using. We have to talk like normal people. And most people, when they're talking, as Governor Andy Beshear says, about addiction, they're not talking about substance use disorder. They're talking about addiction. Most trans people I know don't use a lot of the words that you see on Blue Sky or X or sometimes from some of the advocacy groups. And so I think if we're going to be strong and good and clear communicators, we've got to be accessible. That is a progressive value. That is a democratic value. And when you use words that people don't understand, it shuts down conversation and it doesn't achieve the end goal of actually convincing people of the rightness of our cause or welcoming them into our coalition.
I'm curious, you mentioned that you see words that trans people wouldn't use mm-hmm. from folks online. I don't know if they're activists or whomever. What are some of those words that you're talking about?
I mean, look, I think some of those words appear in the document. I, for instance, more often hear well-intended allies use the term birthing person than trans people. Trans people are not a monolith, and they aren't all, you know, getting their master's degree at a institution of higher education. Trans people are working class people. Trans people talk like everyone else. And again, I don't think the proposal put forward by Third Way is calling for us to betray our values. It's calling on us to be more effective in defending and fighting for those values.
And my follow-up to on that, Congresswoman McBride, is, you know, a lot of folks within the trans community yourself has benefited from the more inclusive view of the Democratic Party. What about folks who say, you know what, if we go back on the words, if we don't make sure that the language includes everyone, we're giving up this inclusivity, this inclusivity, yes.
Sure. And look, I think that there's no question that we should be inclusive and welcoming. But the goal of a political coalition, the goal of social change is to grow your ranks. And I don't think that we weren't speaking in a way that wasn't inclusive enough before. And we're not in a great place right now. So I think if we want to get to a better place, if we want to truly defend people, we've got to use clearer, more normal language. And I think that at the end of the day, look, you know, we can fight for an ideal. We can want at some point for culture, including language, to change. But you don't get there by just forcing everyone without a conversation. You don't get there by forcing everyone without any explanation to talk exactly like you want to talk. I mean, I think part of the problem in our politics is too often we say, not only do you have to agree with us on every single issue, but then you also have to talk like us on every single issue. I mean, that's going to create a really self-righteous, morally pure club at the gulag we've been all sent off to.
Yeah. I mean, Michael and Matt agree with you. Michael says, I've knocked on doors in Philly for multiple elections. I agree. If you use these words talking to an average voter, they will look at you funny. Matt says the Democrats' language sounds like secret words in a club. The Dems can't afford to be a club and hope to govern. So, but, you know, Congresswoman McBride, that I'm sure you know this, like you've used some of these words in the past. Like I was going through your Twitter doing the keyword search. You've used Latinx and housing insecurity and some of the stuff that's on this list. So I am curious if you could revisit your own past use of language. Do you feel like, hey, I was just not aware that these words sounded exclusive? I wasn't thinking about it. Like, how would you go back and analyze your own past use of language?
You know, I love that you asked that question. I love that you pointed that out, because one of the things that I've been very clear about is that I'm not innocent in some of the faults that our coalition and our party has made over the last several years. I was in the advocacy world for a while, and I think sometimes, like many Democrats, I fell into the trap of trying to show that I was part of the in-group, was part of the club, and I think that that was, in the at the end of the day, counterproductive to the end goal. It was really when I started running for office and having the privilege of interacting with people that don't just think and live like me, that I really saw how counterproductive it was to speak in a way that most people didn't understand.
So it was campaigning that turned on the green light for you in that?
Yeah, look, I think one of the problems in our democracy right now is that we increasingly, because of the technology we live on and the mobility of our lives, we are increasingly living amongst people who think and vote like we do. We are increasingly only seeing information from people who agree with us online or in the news. And it creates an echo chamber. And the great blessing of running for office is I am forced out of my comfort zone. I'm forced out of my safe spaces. And I have to interact with people across the state of Delaware and across the country, people who voted for me in the last election and people who didn't vote for me in the last election. And I learned a lot in that experience, serving in the state Senate, running for Congress statewide, serving in Congress. I learned a lot. And one, it changed the way I communicate and talk. It increased for me the importance of being as accessible as possible. But I also think it instilled a deep sense of hope in me, because I realized that when you actually get out there and talk to not just the engaged minority, but the vast majority, you realize that, yes, there are real disagreements, but we aren't as divided as the algorithm suggests. And therefore, the art of persuasion is still possible if we are willing to do the hard work of changing hearts and minds and reaching people and meeting people where they are. And that includes the language and the words we use.
Yeah, Rob says many people on the left seem more eager to change language than to challenge the system. In the last 50 years, we've gone from vagrancy to homelessness to unhoused, but the actual problem just seems to get worse. I want to bring in another caller really quickly. We have Brian from Morristown on the line. Brian, what's your question or comment? You're on Studio 2.
In terms of comment, the what words I'm sick of hearing is the word woke. I mean, I know it was just talked about earlier, but I don't know, what does it mean? Where is it in the dictionary? Is it an acronym? Spelled out? But again, with all the other words, it's just naturally there's too many words in the English language. Yep. And all we just do is add more confusion by adding more. And it's getting out of control. And the big problem with the Democrats, they're getting sidetracked, which is what Donald Trump wants.
Yeah.
They need to focus on the economy. He hasn't done anything about the economy, and the Democrats need to stress that.
Thank you. That's Brian from Morristown. And so I think Brian has a point. You know, a lot of language was a big distraction during, you know, this last campaign. And so how do you sort of back out of it? So how do Democrats get to a place where that is not the focus? Do they just stop using the words and just move on? Congresswoman Matt, you know, both of you jump in. What is the strategy for letting this go and moving on?
Well, I would say I think that we do have to own up to the mistakes that we've made. I mean, similar to the question that was asked earlier, I mean, I think we have to be clear that we are people and we make mistakes and we don't always engage in a way that is as welcoming as it should be. I think we have to own up to that. And then, of course, talk about what really matters. I think all of your colleagues, all of your callers are exactly right. And I think that one of the reasons why the conversation around sort of speaking in a way that is clearer and more digestible is so important is that when we say these words that people get hung up on, it then results in our political conversation getting hung up on those words,
right?
Rather than, you know, the caller was asking what is woke. Why aren't we talking about just being kind and respectful to everyone, treating everyone with dignity? Everyone pretty much can get behind that. I think that if we use that kind of language when we're talking about issues of basic dignity and equal rights, it allows us to speak in a way that's resonant, that isn't distracting, and then allows us to move the conversation to where it needs to be, which is on core economic policy issues that are impacting working people across this country.
Before we let you go, Congresswoman McBride, and I know you've got to run, I think there's probably a lot of people listening right now saying, look, it's not the language that's the problem. It's the policy prescriptions, and specifically that Democrats do not seem eager to challenge the status quo, that they were okay with the basic setup of things in this country, and they're just trying to stop Donald Trump from dismantling those things. How would you respond to that? So to the idea of Democrats as defenders of status quo, and that's the core issue.
Yeah, well, I absolutely think that that's at play. There's no silver bullet here. You know, you can't just not use certain words and then expect everything to be okay. It's one part of a larger conversation. But we as a party cannot be the defenders of the status quo. Donald Trump is destroying a lot right now, but our solution to that cannot just be to rebuild the systems and the programs and the policies of the past that were already not working for people. We have to imagine something better. We have to put forward a policy prescription that meets the needs of an ever-changing world. We can't just build back what existed and return to the status quo of the past. We've got to have proposals that lift people out of poverty. We've got to have proposals that improve benefits for working families, like paid family and medical leave, which I passed in Delaware. We've got to make sure that we're grappling with the incoming transformation of artificial intelligence that will likely be the single greatest change in human history since humans stopped being a nomadic people. I mean, these are big challenges. And if we are focused on those issues, if we have bold, clear, forward-thinking solutions on the challenges of today and tomorrow, then we can focus the conversation on that. But when we're just talking about the status quo, when there's no difference between us and Republicans on economic policy in people's minds, then inevitably the conversations and the disagreement will turn to those places that remain, and that is too often in the body politic, just the social issues.
Well, Congresswoman Sarah McBride from Delaware, thank you so much for your time today on Studio 2.
Thanks for having me.
And by the way, our questions was, do you think Democrats should stop using woke words? What words drive you crazy? We got a lot of comments. William on Facebook, YouTube says, please don't use letter acronyms to define groups of people. These combinations are not authentic. BIPOC, LGBTQ plus, William doesn't like it. Mr. Harold says, I'd rather be woke than sleep. So that was his comment. Marilyn says, I am woke, retired professional social worker. Isn't the counterpoint to woke asleep? So we have a bunch of callers on the line. Maybe we should get to one before.
I know Matt's been holding there, but let's get one more in.
Yeah.
Missy from Wilmington, Delaware is on the line. Missy, you're on Studio 2. What is your question or comment?
Hi. First off, love your show.
Thanks, Missy.
And I hate to use this analogy because I know Sherry is kind of tired of this gentleman around town. However, we need to stop living in an Avenger society, and we need more Rockies. You can tell I've listened before.
You can tell Missy's a listener. I love it.
You're talking about being fighters, though. That's what you're saying, right, Missy?
Correct. It doesn't matter what is said anymore. It's when are we all going to start doing something actively, whether small in our community or getting involved, to change the narrative that Americans are woke, broke, asleep, they're racist, they're this. How about we all just come together and work together and remember ourselves in the Constitution that is for we the people and not a divisive president. And I don't care what words you use. I care about the intent, what you choose to do with your choices in your voting booth, and how they are going to unite us and bring us together.
Missy from Wilmington, Delaware.
Well, that's brings up such an important point about intent. Mm-hmm. And Matt, I would love to get your thoughts on this, because there are some of these word debates where clearly the intent of the folks that I would say generally are on the right is mean, spirited, harmful. The one I think about often is this insistence on reviving the R word for mm-hmm. people who are mentally disabled. I understand it just feels like the only purpose of that is to be mean, regardless of what the etymology of the R word is. The purpose of it today is to, you know, loosen people up to be meaner to one another. And then I ask you then, Matt, like, how far do you follow down this path? Do you concede on the R word or some of these other things that really more read like slurs?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's vile the way that they use that language. Disgusting. And you're exactly right. It's to be cruel. The cruelty is the point for a lot of the kind of MAGA Republicans. And that should be absolutely condemned always. And let me give you another example. When Sarah McBride got to Congress, her colleagues, mm-hmm. first of all, tried to keep her out of a gender-appropriate bathroom, and then they intentionally used the wrong gender in describing her. That is disgusting, and that is aggressive, and it is cruel, and it is it should be no part of our discourse. By contrast, the words on our list actually were developed in good faith. All of them were intended to kind of help people, protect vulnerable populations, be more inclusive. We absolutely would stipulate that all of this was done with the best of intentions. The problem is that it has clanged in our politics, and it has helped to kind of empower the very people that are doing the terrible things that you just described by making it harder to beat them in elections.
But if, Matt, there was some focus group data that said 60% of voters and 55% of independents want us to be able to use the R word, if you follow some of the logic of your memo, you would say, all right, well, yeah, let's concede on that. I guess I'm asking if there is a sort of ideological red line you wouldn't cross, even if the polling said you should cross it.
Yes, there absolutely is. I mean, look, you're right. If we were completely mercenary about this, we would just say, do whatever works best.
Yeah.
But we're not. What we're saying is, don't be cruel. Cruelty should never be part of this. And using words like that should and phrases like they used about Sarah McBride is unacceptable always. But just be mindful that the kinds of words on our list, while done in the best of intentions, actually are hurting the very people we're trying to protect. And I thought Sarah was very articulate about this when she was saying, look, let's just be clear. Winning elections is vastly more important to protecting vulnerable populations like the transgender community than the words that we choose. The fact that she is now facing, and she and all other transgender Americans are facing the kinds of just viciousness coming from the president on down, you know, like not allowing them to put their proper gender on their passport, kicking them out of the military. None of that would be happening if we'd won the election last year. And part of the reason we didn't is that we were out of touch with voters.
Yeah, I want to read this comment from Kate, who says, so now people can't sound smart. I've talked like an educated person all my life, and I am a blue-collar, hardworking American. I understand that some words, like birthing person, trigger emotions, but saying that speaking properly because you are smart means that someone isn't going to vote for you and isn't normal is silly. Some words trigger people who are hateful. That's not a democratic problem. And so I want to bring in one more caller before, because I know we're getting closer to, maybe we can get to, we have Sue from Philly is on the line. Sue, you're on Studio 2. What's your question or comment?
Well, hi there. Yes. Okay. I guess I'm an older gay woman, and I think the Democrats need to smarten up with regard to getting off appealing perpetually to LGBTQ community. And I mean, I'm part of it. But fact of the matter is, I already know that Republicans don't have my back. I've got to be an idiot not to know they don't have my back. Trump has been successful using a fourth grade vernacular to reach his people. his the way he speaks, whatever. He just speaks to them. He mentioned once about the space program, oh, the alien, you know, going against the aliens. Well, you know, everybody in a tinfoil hat jumped up behind that. Yeah. They remembered it. And then he moved on to his next prejudice.
Yeah.
And fact of the matter is, using it in a positive fashion, the Democrats do not have to go out every time they go out and start talking about their inclusiveness with the LGBTQ. Let's talk to the middle class.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's Sue from Philly.
Talk to the middle class.
Thank you, Sue. That's Sue from Philly. And so, Matt, I want to sort of piggyback on what Avi had to say, because how do you come to a place where you get language that is inclusive, that doesn't offend, you know, this big umbrella the Democrats are trying to create, but at the same time, it gets to the point, it's simple, can, you know, get, can reach everybody regardless of background, and specifically that middle class that Sue was talking about?
You know, I really think it's mostly common sense. And you mentioned this earlier, like this isn't language that's been part of the political debate forever. We can kind of go back to the way that we talked 10 years ago and we'll be fine. And look, my new rule for politics is sound like Sarah McBride. You know, if you can sound, you can be smart. Certainly no one's saying don't sound intelligent. You should sound intelligent. Just don't use terms that are kind of exclusive to these spaces on university campuses and elsewhere that don't sound like normal people. So, for example, if you're talking about, you know, don't use incarcerated persons, talk about people in jail. Like, that is how normal people talk. If you are a Democrat or a Democratic ally and you are tempted to use words that people in your high school class don't use in their normal lives, maybe find a different phrase, because if you are using those terms, you are making it harder for Democrats to win. And at bottom, that is what this is all about. We have got to be better connected to the voters that have left us. One of your earlier callers made the case correctly that Black women are they're the kind of iron core of the Democratic Party. They, thank God, they never leave us. But Black men did start to leave Democrats in 2024, not in huge numbers, but in scary numbers, and Hispanic men in very large numbers. So this isn't just a problem about white voters. This is a problem of voters of color as well, that we have lost touch with them and we've got to get it back.
That is Matt Bennett, Executive Vice President for Public Affairs and co-founder of Third Way, helped draft that memo we've been talking about today on the program. Hey, Matt, thanks so much for the time today on Studio 2.
Thank you.
And let me thank some of the callers we couldn't get to, like Ray and Kenneth and Ken. And let me read in this comment from Gary, interesting one. Gary says, it seems to be all about scripting. We all do it. We talk to our parents and family differently than our friends. I'm a contractor and speak differently with clients than I do with other contractors. No one wants to be talked down to.
No, they do not. We had a lot of callers and commenters today. Thank you to everybody who chimed in. Also, as we get ready to wrap up the show, thank you to our producers, Debbie Builder and Andreas Copes. Mike Schiffler is our visual producer. Al Banks and Tina Calicay engineered today's show. Our executive producer is Kevin McCory. From Studio 2 here at WHYY in Philadelphia, I'm Cherry Gregg.
And I'm Avi Wolfman-Aaron. I'm sorry, Wolfman-Aaron.
We
will
so
talk
good.
With you tomorrow.